Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, Sports City. It's your boy TP Timeless. We are back in the kitchen. Little hiatus yesterday, but don't worry. We got these dishes all set. The grill is all loaded. We got a lot of topics to throw on this bad boy. I done took off this blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside the kitchen. Timeless is alive. Welcome to the cookout, people.
What about I be caught in this life? Let's celebrate with a toast and get lost in tonight and make it all light up. Wait until the sun goes down. We gon' make this bitch light up. Even when the sun goes down, I'ma make it go.
Ow, hoes turning heads like owls. I'm the man of the owl. Triple entendre, don't even ask me how. Con Edison flaunts next to a high power. Y'all can miss me with the money talk. The smart money's on hold, fuck what the dummies talk. I don't do too much blogging. I just run the town, I don't do too much jogging. The summer's off, the winter too. Top down in the winter, that's what winners do. And to these niggas, I'm like Windows 7. You let them tell it, they swear, cause they invented you.
Okay. The calling number is 917-889-9592. You got the next 90 minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but you're here with the chefs, man. And we got this grill all set, man. We got a lot of interesting stuff to jump into, some interesting moves. So hopefully y'all stay tuned, Sports City. We're going to go all across the board here in the kitchen. But let me get my co-host with me, calling in by way of the state of South Carolina. You guys know him as Mr. Knight, a.k.a. Nostradamus. Welcome to the cookout. How are you feeling this evening?
I'm good, man. What's going on?
Not too much, man. We got to get back in this kitchen and give these people some food for thought. First and foremost, the first topic that comes to mind for me right now is I load this grill up, and I know Chandler got some stuff to throw out there, too. So we're going to be going back and forth as much as possible to the call-in line start to let us know what's going on out there. But the first thing I want to talk about is the Denver Nuggets and Ty Lawson and the Ty Lawson move for him going to the Houston Rockets. Now, the Rockets have actually been searching for a point guard. To be honest, Beverly actually started to play well last year before the injury that actually, you know, came to him and, you know, sidelined him for the remainder of the season and the postseason as well. Now they have Ty Lawson there. You have a defensive-minded point guard and Patrick Beverly, who can actually shoot the ball well also. And you got Ty Lawson, who's definitely a change-of-pace type of guard. Give or take him being out there on the floor or Patrick Beverly being out the floor, more notably, I think Lawson will end up being a starter at the point guard position. One, your thoughts on Lawson going to Houston. And two, Sports City, excuse me, what the hell is going on in Denver right now? Like it is really a fire sale in Colorado. They watch Shaw leave, Ty Lawson gone. Now there's other talks of other players potentially being moved away from the Denver Nuggets. Your thoughts on the Nuggets after all of the melee last season? Chandler, are you still available?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I had it on mute. First off, because I'm trying to pull up his stats right now, but let me start with the obvious. Why would you trade? First of all, Ty Lawson better be suspended for at least 20 games this upcoming season. He better be suspended for at least 20 games. Okay? Because last I checked, that's his second DUI in less than a year. I'm not trying to hear about he's in rehab. I'm not trying to hear that. Getting drunk behind the wheel got nothing to do with rehab. That's a choice, bud. Okay? There's a whole lot of people who got addiction, ain't driving drunk. So, first of all, he better be suspended. And if he's not, then the NBA's got some explaining to do. But then he goes, why would you trade for a guy who should be getting suspended? Why would you trade for a guy to be the leader of your team who obviously has no self-control, who obviously is still immature? And you call yourself a championship contender. Now, his career stats are, he's a 16-5 guy. To some people, that will be considered top 10 point guard. To me, it's not, because it's more than numbers. Ty Lawson is not a franchise point guard. He's not a top 10 point guard. He's an idiot. Why you would trade for him, a guy who loves to jack up shots, who is a ball dominant guard, which means he's really not a point guard. He's a shooting guard. So you got another ball dominant guard when you got James Harden, and you got to feed Dwight Howard. This trade don't make sense to me for anybody but the Denver Nuggets, because they got rid of him and his salary. That's the only way this thing makes sense to me, is for the Denver Nuggets. For the Houston Rockets, I think it's the dumbest trade in the world. I really do.
Now, interesting that you come at that perspective, because now I'm looking at it differently, knowing that Ty Lawson is one of those guys that likes to push the pace and more or less he's out in front of the break majority of the times. And looking at his career numbers, just like you said, he's a 16-5 type of guy. I think he had to go out there and score more points on the team that he was on, more or less, than a team that he had to be able to distribute. Because, you know, the last time I can really think of him having a team around him that surrounded him with talent was in college, no less, when he was in North Carolina, and actually he was able to maintain and getting a championship and able to move the ball and get these guys involved. However, just like you said, Harden is one of those guys that crosses half court, needs the ball, orchestrates his crossover and can get a jump shot up. And then you have to think about something interesting that you did say, Chandler, and I agree with you 1,000%. What about Dwight Howard in this madness? Because Dwight Howard needs to see the ball other than being a glorified garbage man, which a lot of people say that, you know, Dwight Howard doesn't have any moves, he doesn't have a jump shot, so on and so forth. Well, he still needs that ball to work the offense. Like, you need to dump it down to somebody. And if he's not getting the ball, Harden's not getting the ball, I think friction can happen. It can happen. But not just, you know, saying this is etched in stone and it's going to be, you know, fire in the works. But I think this is definitely a very questionable move. But I think, one, Ty Lawson had to get away from Denver, because the way that everything is pointing, from the coach search to some of the players being removed, I mean, I don't know what's going on in Denver. So I think he was looking for any team that was successful outside of Colorado and just, you know, to jump on board and try to make something happen. But this is something to watch closely, especially if McHale actually, you know, more or less is going to let Ty Lawson dominate the ball and orchestrate the offense, or stick with what's gotten them to the, you know, the Western Conference Finals, if you will, and letting Harden operate and letting, you know, Lawson kind of run free and be another option outside of Harden. So that is something to worry about within the offense. Yes or no, Chandler?
Yeah, I mean, okay, Dwight Howard was 18-12 last year. People can talk all they want about, he doesn't have a move, this, that, and the third. He was 18-12 last year. I'm sorry, wait a minute. Yep. No, that's career. For last season, he was 15-10. I'm sorry, he was 15-10, which for him was low. Season before that was 18-12. Okay, so here's the guy that, so call it, if you split it down the middle, he's going to be about a 16-10 guy. That means he needs the ball. That means he, you know, he needs the ball. He can't just, he's not going to put up that just rebounding. Ty Lawson, even in college, was a ball dominant guard. Even in college, he was. He was still a ball dominant guard. It just doesn't make sense on any level. And I'm sorry if you people know, oh, that he's the last piece of the puzzle. He's the same guy who quit on his coach. He quit on Brian Shaw. Now, regardless of how you feel about what Brian Shaw did, he still quit on his coach. He still quit on him. So what do you think will happen if he gets to Houston and he's not happy? There's a reason Ty Lawson keeps getting – this isn't – what is this, Ty Lawson's third team now? This is 13 now, isn't it?
I think so.
So if he was that great, fine, and fabulous, this wouldn't be his 13. There's a reason this is his 13. There's a reason that no team has said, we want to keep him forever. Okay? There's a reason for it. So I'm not trying to hear the nonsense about him right now. I'm really, really not. This trade makes no sense to Houston. It makes no sense. Yeah, he was selected by the Timberwolves, then he went to the Nuggets, and now he's with the Rockets. So you went from Minnesota, bad team, to Denver, bad team, and now you're in Houston. Last I checked, when you bring in guys from losing cultures, and he's come from two losing cultures, they usually don't add to a winning culture. They usually detract from it.
This is actually his second team. He got picked up by Denver as a rookie, but he ended up getting traded in that draft to Denver. So this is his second run. But still, the one thing that I am concerned about with Ty Lawson is his defensive prowess, one, because I've never seen him play strong defense on anybody. He is back in the saddle in the Western Conference again, up against all of these tough guards that he's going to have to go up against, from CP3 to Russ to Damian Lillard, and knowing that James Harden don't play defense either. So you got to pick your poison if you're going to go out there with Patrick to play some D, because Patrick started stepping his game up before he got injured, or go out there with Ty, who actually has better stats. Statistically, he's a better stat guy than Patrick Beverley. I'm going to be honest in that situation. But I think with more pieces around him, he can be successful. Knowing that he's a push-pace type of guard, I don't know if he's going to sit there and wait for this offense to, settle in and try to pack it in as best as possible, get into Dwight or Terrence, or wait for Harden to kind of, wait till the shot clock expires to get a jump shot up or force the foul issue. This is all a work in progress, if you will. I'm actually trying to kind of play the devil's advocate or play the fence in this situation, but I think Ty Lawson has a decent amount of, basketball IQ. And last season, he actually had fair stats last year. He was 15-10, being 15 points a game and 10 assists a game. And this is actually on a Denver Nugget team, too. So knowing that he has guys around him, I want to see if he is successful. Now, if he's not, if he's actually watching point guards blow by him and he's watching guys go for 22 a night, 30 a night, like those type of stats, this can be a questionable move, because the anchor being Dwight Howard in the paint defensively is in a vulnerable spot, because they actually, lost Josh. Josh is another shot blocker that they had in the paint. A lot of these guys don't play defense on Houston. That is the one thing that I am concerned about with the Houston Rockets. Houston was actually at the doorstep of being, eliminated, and they fought their way back to get back in that series and steal it. I think they're quite vulnerable, but having a guy like Ty Lawson, this is a work in progress, to say the least. That is something that I am concerned about, especially in a fully loaded Western Conference that he's going to have to worry about on a day-by-day, game-by-game consistent basis.
And that's something you mentioned that is true. This is not a team that's an up-and-down team. This is a half-court set team. Part of the reason he didn't want to play for Brian Shaw was because Brian Shaw wanted to run half-court sets. He didn't want to run half-court sets. So I still come back to the same thing. How does getting him help your team? I don't get it. Unless he's coming off the bench, which if he's coming off the bench, then you're going to have major problems. It doesn't make sense. He doesn't fit that team or that coach, for that matter, because Kevin McHale has never been a guy who's been an up-and-down kind of coach. He's always been a half-court guy.
Now, interesting enough, looking at the other side of the spectrum, what the heck is going on in Denver? This is what I'm concerned about, right? Now, there's already talks about them potentially moving other players on this team. They get rid of their head coach, which Brian Shaw was not successful, and I know Chandler would love to tell you, anybody outside of that Phil Jackson situation that leaves them, that triangle does not work. And it's interesting because it holds true to what he's saying. But they just threw an extension at Gallo. Because Ty Lawson walked out, they gave him a 2-year extension worth $34 million. Now, I think this is more or less them putting a ton of eggs in one basket on Gallo and waiting to see how the rest of this team materializes. One, Gallo is not the best of, health-orientated players. He's injury-prone. And two, he's had, I want to say, 2 to 3, strikes of lightning in a bottle, if you will, throughout his career. For the money that they're dumping in the Gallo, do you question what's going on in Denver, or do you think this is actually a good move for the Denver Nuggets team, who really does not have an identity as of yet?
I think it's a terrible move. You're giving Danilo Gallinari $14, $14, and $15 million over the next 3 years. He's getting $14, $14, and $15, or $14, $15, and $14, but he's getting $14 million a year. Let's just say $14 a year. $14 million a year for Danilo Gallinari. For what? For what? A guy who plays half a season? It doesn't make sense. Okay, if you say, I was on Twitter today with some Wilson Chandler, Danilo Gallinari, they're going to help lead the culture change. My question is, neither one of them knows anything about winning. So exactly how are they going to change the culture? Oh, because they wanted to stay in Denver. Yeah, they wanted to stay in a losing situation. That doesn't say a lot to me about their winning attitude, because they were willing to stay in Denver. It'd be different if Denver was on the rise. It'd be different if they had a plan that you could see it where, you know, okay, they got some draft picks, they got some young players, they're going to be good. They're not going to be good for 3 years. So the two guys that they're giving all this money to, by the time those 3 years come, they'll be in their 30s, because one of them is 26, the other is 27, at which point Denver will be moving them. So I say again, exactly what they're doing, they're tanking. They're taking a page out of the Sixers book, okay? They're signing some guys to make it look like they're trying to get better. And those same guys they've signed, they will probably trade at some point, either next season or the season after, and they're going to get into the lottery. They're going to be just like the Sixers. That's what I see. But the way they're doing it is going to look like they're trying. They don't want their fans to not think they're trying. So you sign a guy to more money than he should get. Wilson Chandler got overpaid, but I like Wilson Chandler, so I don't care. But the fact of the matter is they're counting on two guys who never won a doggone thing.
Look up on the straightforward.
And then you're going to say, oh, they're going to help change the culture. It doesn't make sense. And if they trade for Reed, because, okay, you trade for Reed, now that leaves you Danilo Gallinari and Wilson Chandler. You're in the Western Conference. Tell me that you're going to be more than an 11th seed with those two guys as your primary guys.
And look at this, right? And that's what I was trying to lead to, but he already jumped into that. That's good that he put it on the grill, so he lead me right into that. Chandler actually hit me with the potential of the situation that the Nuggets may potentially move for Reed. That's what I was hinting at. That they may end up sending him to Dallas. I don't know how much is there, but we'll see if they do make that move. Now, one, I think Dallas is trying to fill the paint because of what happened with DeAndre Jordan, but we'll get to that issue. We're spilling all over this kitchen, and I love it. But for Reed leaves, depending on what they do get back from Dallas or if anything comes back from Dallas, but to fill the shoes, if you will, of Kenneth Faried, you got behind him J.J. Hickson, who is a solid body, but here we go again, another injury-prone player. Hickson has missed time also. Now, I know he can get you double-doubles. He's strong in the paint. You know, there's a good amount of things you can say about J.J. Hickson, but you have Gallinari injury-prone. You got Wilson Chandler who can't stay on the floor. J.J. Hickson can't stay on the floor either. And looking at their backcourt with them moving Ty Lawson, they have Jameer Nelson now at the point guard, where some people are high on him, some people are low on him, depending on what Jameer Nelson they got. But this is an aged Jameer Nelson, especially from the year when he was with Orlando and they got to the finals. This isn't the same Jameer, so he's going to have to work hard. And their starting two guard is Randy Ford, another injury-prone player. A lot of these guys don't see or stay on the floor as much as a Denver Nugget team who's trying to fight their way out of the cellar would like them to be, particularly. Your thoughts, if they do move for Reed, how much trouble is this Denver Nugget team, outside of you staying at the tanking, but just let's just say, even if these guys are out there on the floor, I'm not impressed with their starting five, or the next man off the bench, if you could pick one. I mean, Wilson Chandler, I do respect his game. I give Wilson Chandler some respect, but this starting five isn't anything scary to me, at least in the Western Conference. I mean, they still have the youngster that they picked up from Arizona, Nick Johnson, but other than that, I'm not barking by any means from what Denver's showing at this point.
I mean, okay, your starting five would be Wilson Chandler, Danilo Gallinari, and who else?
It depends if they want to put Chandler at the four, which I doubt that. I think J.J. Hickson would more or less be the guy at the four. That's if he's healthy throughout the duration of the season.
Chandler's a two guard. He's a two guard. Wilson Chandler's only 6'6". He's a two guard. So he's going to play the two or the three, and if you put him at the three.
But he started at the three. So, okay, so if you think that's how it'll be. So this is projected just starting five. You think it's Jameer, Wilson, Danilo, J.J., and then Nurkic, the youngster from the Europe area.
Yeah, that's if you trade for Reed, which means that what you're telling me is you want to be about a 20-win team. That's what you're telling me if you trade for Reed. You're telling me you only want to win 20 games. because that team is not going to win more than 20 games, especially since Wilson Chandler, by the way, is also injury prone. Okay. He's like Amon Shumpert. He's guaranteed to miss 20 games with a shoulder injury. He's guaranteed to miss 20. Gallinari's guaranteed to miss 30. Hicks is guaranteed to miss 10 to 15. I mean, are you kidding me right now? And when are you going to get back from Dallas for Fareed? Dallas doesn't have anything to trade. Who do they have to trade? Hell, they can't sign anybody. Richard Jefferson broke behind, went to Cleveland, and Richard Jefferson has been done for three. Listen, the only person who knows Richard Jefferson is still in the league is Richard Jefferson, okay? So who does Dallas have to give you? All right? Him and his mom. Those are only two people that knew Richard Jefferson was even still in the league, okay? Jameer Nelson, at this point, should be a backup point guard mentoring a young upcoming point guard. That's where Jameer Nelson should be. So if the Denver Nuggets are on track for 20 wins, they're on track for 25 with Fareed, they're on track for 20 without him.
Now, don't forget they do have the kid Moutier that the Knicks were high on. A lot of people were high on this guy coming from overseas, but he's a rookie. So we'll see if he could actually come in and be influential to this team. But I am questioning, if they let go of Fareed, I agree with you, Chandler. I think the Nuggets are tanking. I really do. I agree with you. I'm actually going to come back to that NBA topic. I do want to get to the pigskin because we are getting closer to the month of August and preseason is approaching. But here we go, Sports City. As I get to a very interesting one, and here we go. I got to let go. Excuse me. Now, just a year ago, a little bit more than a year ago, or less than a year ago, excuse me, let me get this right, less than a year ago, Adrian Peterson was in trouble, people, because of disciplining his son, which some people agree with, some people don't, you know what I'm saying? And he faced a legal situation and sat out the remainder of the season. And more or less, Adrian Peterson's agent was saying, well, you know, we're not coming back. And a lot of people were like, well, Jerry Jones is in love with Adrian Peterson, so we'll see him in Dallas. And then everything squanders away. They get DMC down there, and they're looking like they're going to go with the backup running back Randall, that backup DeMarco Murray. And now, all of a sudden, after all of the dust settles, Adrian Peterson is in talks and renegotiating or restructuring the contract for the remainder of that contract in Minnesota more than ever. He's staying in Minnesota to make this happen and finish this one out. Chandler, your thoughts on how everything just went crazy just around a year ago and now is more or less looking like 2-8 is back in that purple and gold up in Minnesota. Your thoughts all the way out. I mean, your thoughts. I don't even want you to hold back on this situation because it was funny. Just a year ago, everybody was punishing him and talking so much junk about Adrian Peterson, and now this is in discussion that he's renegotiating the situation. It's not like teams wouldn't touch Adrian Peterson. Believe me, the boy's a monster carrying the ball, so a lot of teams would go after him, but now this is an issue as of now.
Well, I don't think it means he's staying, personally. He had $40 million left. They restructured it so that $20 million of it is now guaranteed, which, if I'm right, which I don't know if I am, that lowers the cap hit. If that lowers the cap hit, he is now tradable because no team is going to take him with that cap hit. So if I'm right, I don't know if I am because I'm not one of those capologists. But if I'm right, by giving him more guaranteed money up front, you lower the cap hit for the remaining $20 million, which means, in my opinion, he's imminently tradable now. So now I'm thinking a package of, say, Joseph Randle and 2 second-rounders, you know, for a second rounder for the next 2 drafts, does that get him to Dallas? Because I still think I still don't believe that he will start the season in Minnesota. I still believe he will not be in Minnesota come whatever day it is the season starts. I still don't believe it. And I think what this restructuring does is now it now allows them, if they decide to keep him, they can. But I think it now makes him tradable if I'm right about this lowering his cap hit.
Now, before I let somebody in the building, do you think this is something that Adrian Peterson will feel like he's kind of wanting to do to get away from Minnesota, or do you think that he's trying to kind of make amends and, you know, start from the bottom with Minnesota and get back to where he once was, and that was atop the NFL running the ball for these Minnesota Vikings?
No, I don't think it has anything to do with that. Either way this plays out, he gets more guaranteed money, which is what he wanted. So if they trade him, he's still got his $20 million guaranteed. If they keep him, he still got his $20 million guaranteed, which, again, is what he wanted. So no matter how this works out, he got his guaranteed money. Let's remember, in the NFL, it's the guaranteed money that counts. That's the money that counts to the player, okay? So either way it goes, he got more money guaranteed, which means he's getting more money out of this deal. I don't think this has anything to do with him trying to mend fences with Minnesota. I think if they came to him right now and said, we trade you to Dallas, he would jump up, click his heels, and run out the door.
Okay, we do have a chef in the building calling in from Arizona. We have Nacho at the cookout. Nacho, welcome to the building. How are you feeling this evening?
Oh, I'm feeling good, feeling great. The interesting topic you guys are talking about, interesting.
Okay, so your thoughts on the Adrian Peterson drama saga that is now continuing, and the restructuring situation, do you agree with what Chandler says, that he becomes more of a tradable asset, or do you think Minnesota hangs on to him and tries to go into the season with their notable leader?
No, I don't think it's a tradable asset for this season, but I do for next season. Yeah, Chandler's correct, but I don't think it's as soon as he's anticipating. He's saying that Adrian might not be there this year. I think Adrian plays this year out. With this contract next year, like Chandler said, this will be a smaller cap hit for anyone on the trade market. So it's not as big still, even with I think it would be 2 years and whatever over $20 million left he would have on the next contract after that, because this was 3 and 40. You know, just figure out the math there in itself. But I think that this is more or less Adrian trying to get a little bit more guaranteed money like he wanted, because the speculation that was out there was that he would go to Dallas or to an Arizona and restructure his contract to get more money guaranteed up front. So I think this, you know, is something that Minnesota wanted to do to levy that against him, or not against him, but to levy that for him and say, you know, this is what you're willing to do for those teams. Well, we're willing to do it for you. We'll guarantee you more money up front. Plus, like you said, it also gives them that opportunity next year to put him on the trade market, on the trade market, and see what he's up for value. And depending on the year he has and what happens and the reception he would get back in those 8 games at home, will determine how, I guess, Minnesota takes this leap of faith with him and continues to go. Obviously, winning the division, making the playoffs, things like that, those might turn people's heads, because winning solves everything in this league. But who knows if he's not the running back that we expect him to be, if his mind's not there, or he's not playing at what Adrian Peterson level should be playing at, fully healthy, considering he just took a year off of football. So in running back status, he's a year younger than what he, you know, his true age is. He hasn't had that year of wear and tear on him, and he was healthy. There was no rehab to try to get back to football. He was already in football shape, just staying in it. So just seeing what Adrian produces on the field, I think next year will determine whether or not they trade him or not. But I think that's the main reasoning, like Chandler said. I just don't think it's as quick as Chandler thinks it's going to be. I anticipate him playing a full season with the Minnesota Vikings, and this totally changes the outlook on them, especially when you bring in the effectiveness of Teddy Bridgewater last year and the way they played good teams like the Packers late in the season.
Chandler, do you agree or disagree? Do you think that he sticks around at least throughout this season and works for Bridgewater, or do you stick by your guns and think that he's out of there before September starts?
I mean, what Nacho said actually makes more sense than what I said. When I think about it, again, do it 1 year, then it's only 2 years left on his deal, and it's a far smaller cap hit. So, I mean, Nacho could be right. I mean, I believe they're going to trade him. I kind of want it to be this season. That's why I keep saying this season. But in reality, it does make more sense if they keep him this year and then trade him next year. That actually does make more sense, especially with the contract restructuring.
Okay, and it would be interesting to see if he could, work a season with Teddy Bridgewater and see if this is something, at least in the next two seasons before, and I don't really want to put this kind of chink on Adrian Peterson before he starts to look like he's losing a step. But to have a mobile quarterback in Teddy Bridgewater, to be alongside a monster of a running back in Adrian Peterson, and knowing that you really can't stack eight guys in the box any longer because they do have some threats in that receiving game now, definitely makes this Minnesota Vikings team interesting if Adrian is to stick around. However, if they were to move him before September, I think this puts a lot of pressure on Bridgewater to try and survive at least the next 2 to 3 seasons without that strong horse coming out of the backfield, being a guy like Adrian Peterson and having to settle with the same type of situation that he had to deal with in the latter part of the season where he actually got the start for this Minnesota Vikings team. But I do want to see how this team being the Minnesota Vikings restructured this contract. And if Adrian Peterson does stay, if he does stay, because all of the junk and crap that the his agent was talking and how these guys are going back and forth, but some of the people that were in the Minnesota organization were saying they're not watching Adrian Peterson walk away from the organization. There's smoke here. There is smoke here. I want to see where the fire is. I do want to see where the fire is. Anything else around this Adrian Peterson situation as we move forward?
Nah.
Okay, the silence helps me. The next topic that I want to talk about, pigskin-wise, is a close one to where I live. Not close to me. People around Sports City know I do not like the team at all. No, let me stop joking. But I go back and forth with a lot of my friends that live in the area, and that is Big Blue. And this is something that my big brother Chandler addressed to me and said this was something that we had to talk about at the cookout. So I'm going to help throw this one out here. Chandler, your thoughts on the Eli situation for Big Blue, them trying to extend him. Do you think he should be the lifelong quarterback for the Giants team, or do you think they're just going to extend him for another, let's say, 2 or 3 years and watch him move to another team like his big brother got moved out of Indianapolis? Do you think he's going to be a household name, more or less like Phil Simms was for the Giants organization, or do you think they'll hang on to him until he really looks like he doesn't have too much left in that tank?
I think Eli Manning will only play with the New York Giants. That's the only team he's ever going to play for. The Giants don't have a choice. I was on Twitter discussing this with somebody, and the Giants don't really have a choice but to extend him. The Giants organization historically have not been good in drafting quarterbacks. They have not. Go down a list of Giant quarterbacks. You got Phil Simms. I mean, drafting quarterbacks. You got Phil Simms, and then the very next great one, or even really good one they had, was Eli Manning. And that's only because Manning forced his way into New York, by the way.
Right.
So if you look at it, and Philip Rivers would not have worked in New York for a variety of reasons, one of which was his personality. It wouldn't have worked in that locker room. So if you think about it, look at the Giants, look at the quarterbacks they've either signed or drafted to back him up over the years. Where is the future franchise quarterback? They've been trying to draft him for 5 years. How's that worked out for him? This is the same organization that drafted Dave Brown. Remember Dave Brown? Remember him? Remember they drafted Jared Lorenzen? Remember him? The hefty lefty, the 500-pound quarterback? Remember him? These are some of the quarterbacks the Giants have drafted. Okay? So if you think about it, right, they have to keep Eli because they can't find a replacement. They don't have a choice. So I think they're going to extend him probably 3 seasons. I'm in hope in those 3 seasons to find the next franchise quarterback.
Now, they do have the kid Nassib out of Syracuse, who they have high hopes about. He's a 6'6", big ball slinger, if you will. They had high hopes in him. I don't know if he is the guy that's the heir to the throne. Do you believe in Nassib being the guy that actually is the heir to the throne, or do you think they'll be waiting for a stud out of college before I go to Nacho?
Nassib is not the quarterback of the future. If you remember when Eli was hurt, they didn't even want to put Nassib on the field. They went to the guy behind him, remember? Mm-hmm. Nassib didn't even get to play when Manning was hurt. So that should tell you all you need to know about him.
Okay, Nacho, your thoughts on the Eli Manning situation, how they're trying to put this extension together for Eli. Do you think he remains a lifelong Giant, or do you think he ends up going to another organization similar to what his brother and, let me actually include this, and like his father did as well?
You know, no, I think, like, to Chandler's point, Eli will be a lifelong Giant. And to further allude Chandler's point, since Phil Simms in 93, New York Giants starting quarterbacks have been Kent Graham, Dave Brown, Danny Cannell, Kerry Collins, and Jesse Palmer, and also, again, the short stint with Kurt Warner when he was still trying to figure himself out and become Kurt Warner again. But, yeah, they haven't had anyone in a long time. Now Eli's here. Say what you will about him, two Super Bowls, and you know, the countless big plays and big situations. So this is the guy that'll be there until he decides he wants to hang up his hat. And like to Chandler's point, they're going to try to find one over the next 3 years. I do agree again, weirdly and oddly enough, agreeing with Chandler so much lately. But I do agree that Nassib is not the guy. To say what you want about him last year in the preseason, they said, you know, he was looking good. And he was getting the offense real well. I guess when Eli wasn't picking it up as quickly, whatever, Nassib is not the guy for them. They're going to still find their quarterback of the future. Is not on their roster right now. They are going to have to draft him over the next couple years.
And knowing how Eli is building this connection right now with Odell Beckham, and you know, a lot of people out here love his connection with Cruz, looking like Odell Beckham is going to be a big-time household name for this Giants team, and that's if he can remain out on the field, because everybody knows how the first couple of games for the Giants, he wasn't there due to injury. But if Eli is to make this connection, I think he can end up being a lifelong Giant. However, this is a business, and we have seen crazier things happen, like the Colts removing a Peyton Manning, but they had Andrew Luck up their sleeve. So that was actually a fortunate situation. I don't see too many studs in college right now at the quarterback position, unless they are in the hunt to a guy like a Cardale Jones or a JT Barrett. Let's just throw those type of names out there right now, who could progressively be better from what they presented in the college season and just this past season in the college ranks, and they just won a national title too. So there are decent names, but if they could handle the media and the pressure of holding down this Giants organization, that is something to see. Anything else that you guys would like to allude to from what the Giants have in spectrum to the quarterback position around Eli Manning moving forward?
Nope.
Okay, that helps me. And I know there was an interesting topic that Chandler wanted to throw out there. Chandler, I'll let you spark the kitchen up. Throw one out here on the grill.
Well, I remember when Earl Smith, you know, I don't call him JR, his name is Earl Smith, Earl Smith from Jersey, opted out of his contract. I don't remember who the chef was, but somebody said, oh, that's a great move for him. That's really smart financially. And I said at the time, I'm going to say it again, are you crazy? You had a chance to opt in to $6.4 million. The only team in the league that wanted you when the Knicks were offering you for literally a bag of balls was Cleveland, and you opted out thinking you're going to get more money. Well, it's a month after free agency. Nobody signed him. And now LeBron James is saying that the only way he gets to come back if he takes a pay cut, because Tristan Thompson got to get paid. I still want to hear people now tell me that J.R. Smith is going to get any more than the league veterans minimum at best. J.R. Smith is not playing in the NBA this season. I don't see where he can play because no one's going to sign him. But I just want to know what you guys think about it. And I want somebody to tell me again why it was a smart move for him to opt out of a player option.
Now, this is a very tough one for me because he opted out. He's trying to get back to that same number of $6 million trying to address it. And knowing that, you know, LeBron is a big fan of Tristan Thompson, I do want to see how that ends up. But, however, who are they going to be settled with at the two-guard position? I mean, let's be honest. I mean, Shumpert plays good defense, but offensively, he's a liability. Like, he may knock down some wide-open threes here or there, but he's not a household three-point shooter, so that's something that I'm concerned about also. So J.R. still may have a legit foot in the door in Cleveland. I do want to see how this does end up panning out, but knowing that Chandler just threw out there that no team may end up touching him, if that is to happen, J.R. Smith overseas trying to keep his game relevant, this would definitely be a shot in the foot to himself with him actually thinking that he could get bigger money from a team that he just helped get to the NBA Finals and trying to hold it down while Kyrie and Kevin Love were out. Nacho, your thoughts on this situation, J.R. Smith actually looking like he's on the outside looking in to Cleveland. Do you think that the Cleveland Cavaliers end up re-signing him, or do you think he'll be elsewhere throughout the NBA, or do you agree with Chandler if he does not get back to this Cleveland Cavalier team that he'll be outside of the NBA for the 2015-2016 season?
I think just for making money, he'll sign somewhere, but he's not going to make the amount of money. And I don't think, you know what, I will go on the limb with Jenner. I don't think anyone will touch him. And not only for the disappearing act that he did in the playoffs and the one good game followed up by disappearing act after disappearing act and nowhere to be found in the finals when they could have used him. The fact that Phil Jackson has now come out and made bold statements, not only about him but about Iman Shumpert, but damning statements about J.R. Smith on how much of a baby he is and personal issues about his girlfriend and things like that. So letting that get in the way of playing basketball, I think that coupled with the fact that, you know, the poor performance we saw last year with the Cavaliers, I do believe that no team will try to touch him for the money that he wants. He won't get nowhere near any amount of money he wants. He'll probably get less than half of the amount that he wants. If more than, because assuming that the $6 million is less than what he wants to make, I don't think anyone's going to pay him now willingly over $2 million a year or for next year. So it's going to be hard for him to try to find a team that's going to want to pay him $6 million or plus next year, regardless of what you say. Like I said, coupled with the fact that he disappeared last year in the playoffs and didn't do anything except for, what was it, the one game for 28 points, followed up by minuscule points and multiple shooting games. Like Chandler said, I fell for it in the playoffs. I thought the 28-point game after the suspension was something that was a waking experience for him. But like Chandler had alluded to multiple times, and why we call him Nostradamus is multiple shots were taken by J.R. Smith after that game, and very few went in. I think that hurts him more than anything else. you should have opted in, stayed with the team. Everyone was going to be healthy. You were going to be in the role you were supposed to be in, which is coming off the bench and doing very minimal work, so to speak. It would have been a great position for you and making the money that I don't think you deserve, but you had been signed a contract for. So does not make any sense to me as well. It'll be hard for him to find a team. And if he's turning down six, it's going to be hard for anyone to offer him anything more than that. Like I said, I don't think any team's going to offer him more than probably the veteran minimum.
And $2 million a year. I want to see this. But looking at their depth chart right now, Shumpert is going to be their guy at the two if they don't get this thing done with JR. But I'm going to be honest. I think Cleveland brings him back. I don't know if it'll be for the number that he wants, because now this is what he's saying. He wants to come back at the price that they want. The ball is in their court. So I think he's looking to literally sign to anything that's reasonable and more or less not be sold a bad dream, if you will. But to be honest, he put himself in a situation. So it's kind of like, I don't know how much, ground you thought you had to stand on from the bad baggage that you've had throughout your NBA career. And I mean, this is supposed to be the turnaround situation, not only with you having that blow-up game up against Atlanta, but you getting away from New York, you getting away from another big city in Denver, you going to Cleveland and saying this is a place where you get to focus, and you basically came up short at the biggest time in your career in the NBA final. And knowing that he tried to light it up late in the second half or two different games. I mean, they need the consistency. And there, people are still out there throwing the likes of Ray Allen out there. Well, Ray Allen just turned 40 yesterday. So they're saying that he didn't mention retirement, but, I mean, what is it going to be? Ray Allen comes back for one season, gives it a go, and then try to get to another NBA final with LeBron, which the potential is there. But I don't know if Ray Allen comes back now. That is one thing that I'm, you know, kind of sweeping under the rug. But we'll see if they do hang on to that. However, I do think Cleveland does bring him back. But it won't be at that six number. I don't know if it'll be as low as two, but we'll see.
Well, Todd, the thing is, if you're Cleveland, right, you already know that this kid is still a kid, even though he should be, at this point, you're not even supposed to be calling him a kid at this point because he's 30 years old. Okay? The kid right. left a long time ago. You already know that this man is a child. Okay? You know that if you bring him back at less than the number he wanted, he's going to pout all season. He's going to pout. And when he pouts, he does what he did in New York, which is disappear for game after game after game. Now, you just brought in Richard Jefferson. Like I said, the only people who knew Richard Jefferson was still in the league were him and his mom. But you just brought in Richard Jefferson, okay? The Cleveland Cavaliers, as presently constructed, once they bring back Tristan Thompson and being in the East, can be in the top three of the East until the trade deadline and then go pick up a shooting guard from one of these teams that's looking to shed contracts going into the draft. You understand what I'm saying? So they don't have to bring him back. They can win without him, and if it turns out they really need a two guard, they can pick one up at the trade deadline. You understand what I'm saying? So I don't see any way he comes back to Cleveland. I don't see it. If the fact that he opted out speaks volumes as to his level of maturity and how invested he was in this team. He had a $6.4 million option. You just went to the NBA Finals. What are you opting out to get? Seriously, what's your thought process there? You disappeared in the finals. When they needed you most, you couldn't be found. You sat down with your agent, and you actually said, I could probably get more money if I opt out. Really? Is that a guy you want on your team? Seriously, is that a guy you want on your team? And not for nothing, how has his agent not been fired yet?
Now, do you put more of this on his agent speaking up for him, or is this just the character of JR? Because we know who JR is. We know JR is one of the more boisterous guys that love to address the media or, you know, speak up for himself. Is this really him, or is this his agent actually jumping the gun and thinking that he can't get this money? Because to be honest, there can be a team that can use his services. I don't think he can go backwards to Denver, but Denver needs a two-guard. And I'm just, you know, throwing teams out there that potentially have this situation around there that they don't really have a solid shooting guard at this given point in time. So, you know, just trying to, you know, quickly off the top of my head think of teams that need a shooter. I mean, the potential may be there that a team may end up giving him six or in that ballpark, but if Cleveland brings him back, I don't think it is lower than two. I think it'll be somewhere in between because now that he's played that type of hardball, I agree with you, Chandler. His immaturity is still in question. I mean, if he's grown up, I think that he's kind of stuck in his ways and feeling himself after, you know, getting as far as he possibly did this potential season. Anything else around that, if possible?
Yeah, there's teams that need two guards. It's not J.R. Smith at $6 million. Nobody's giving him $6 million. The only team that may give him that is a team like Philly that has to get to the minimum salary level. You understand what I'm saying? That's about the only team that would give him that amount of money, and that's mainly because you have to spend a certain amount of money every season. So outside of a team like that, a team that truly is contending that may need a shooting guard, you're not offering him anything other than the veteran's minimum. This way, if he acts up, when you cut him, you don't owe him that much money. Because if he's on any team other than Cleveland, at some point, you're going to have to get rid of him. You're going to get rid of him. Nobody's going to trade for him. So then you're going to have to eat the money. How much money do you want to eat? And as to whether it was him or his agent, if I was his agent, when he said, I want to opt out, I would have said to him, listen, You opt out, then you find yourself a new agent. That's what I would have said. Because don't remember, the agents get some of that contract money. I can get 10% of $6 million, or I get 10% of the veterans minimum. If you're the agent, which one do you want 10% of?
$6 million, of course. That's a no brainer. How about the Portland Trailblazers with them watching everybody go from Wes Matthews to Batum?
Man, him in Portland is a recipe for disaster.
I know I said that I don't think any team would give him a chance, but if this team did, would you think the Indiana Pacers would give him a chance, and how would he fare on that team?
Ooh, that would be ugly. Him and Monte Ellis on the same team, that would not end well. Oh, my God. Right. There's not enough basketballs in the world for those two guys.
And I think it'll be a logjam of guards if you put JR in Indiana. I mean, you got him, Monte, George Hill, and Stucky. I mean, all of these guys can score. They literally can. So it'd be tough to see how Vogel would be able to work that out to get them out there. And plus, don't forget, Paul George is healthy and back now. So I don't know if the Pacers is the move for him. But the one team that I could think about was the team that made the most moves out of their starting five was the Portland Trail Blazers. And knowing that they just picked up Gerald Henderson from the Charlotte Hornets, I mean, I give J.R. the edge over Henderson. That's just me. That is me. I think Portland could use a J.R. Smith if he's not able to get something etched in stone, either with Cleveland or another team outside of the Western Conference. But I don't think that's the move he would like to make. I think that he, just like he said, he wants to see what the Cavaliers come back with. And if they don't give him a crazy low number, I think he is going to re-sign. And moving forward, I mean, do you think his effort actually raises with this Cavalier team? If he, let's just say he does end up coming back, does it raise his efforts? Or do you think this is still the same JR, falls asleep in some games, and some games he comes up and has some of the biggest games that we've seen, and it falls right back asleep? I mean, it is going to be the true makeup of him, especially in his offseason where you know he's probably getting shots up and, you know, trying to be ready for game situation. Nacho, I'll go to you first and then come to Chandler.
You know, going back there, I don't know. I mean, opting out is a big telltale for me, just like Chandler. You know, you had the opportunity. The team was unhealthy through unfortunate events, and you were called upon to start. You know, excuses are excuses, but you were called upon to start, and you showed up really small. Now this is the opportunity. You could have collected your 6.4, came off the bench. Albeit hopefully this team played healthy the whole year, got Tristan Thompson back. This team could have made another deep run. You could have been in the finals again. If this team was healthy, you could have been coming off the bench now, not in a bigger role, not looked upon to be the man, not looked upon to be the second option to LeBron. You could have been, you know, down the line of options, and now you're going to make the money you could have and possibly win a championship. Now you opted out. I don't think that they're going to pay him at all anywhere close to 6.4. Maybe not as low as I'm thinking, but, you know, maybe in the area of 3.5, 3, something like that. Half of what he wanted, because they got half of what they thought, if not less than what they thought they were going to get from him. I don't see that the level of competitiveness in him is going to go up or down, especially if he's going to be making less money on a team. Even though, like we said, if they're healthy, that he's going to be called less upon to do, you know, a big role. He's not going to be the center of attention as much in this, on this team if they're all healthy. I just don't see him wanting to play harder or tougher for less money and a less role. I think maybe if he was getting the 6.4, he was on a team that's winning, that makes more of a difference. And for him, sadly, that's how he would feel. I think JR would feel that way. I'm getting paid. We're winning. Oh, let me go out and perform now. But that's sad for him to think like that. But I think that's how JR would think.
Chandler, your thoughts? Do you think this is a proof to the NBA point, similar to what David West is going through? Do you think that he'll actually get better in his upcoming season, or it, you know, you get what you ask for, with JR, especially with him and all of the antics that followed him coming into this upcoming season. Do you think he gets better or not?
No. He has shown you who he is. And the ultimate example of that was opting out of that contract. That was the ultimate example of that. So he's shown everyone in this league exactly who he is. And if they bring him back for anything more than the minimum, they're stupid.
Okay. Well, we'll see how this does pan out. You know, Sports City is keeping a close eye on this, especially Nostradamus. You know, he's all over Earl Smith. He is not playing with you, JR. Believe me, I do want to see how this does end up panning out. The number they end up throwing you. I want to see if this is over to you. Don't make me a liar. Well, I'm not saying I'm lying. I'm actually speculating. So I don't feel like I'm lying about it, but I think it will be over there. Nacho, a dish that you brought to the cookout tonight, anything that you would like to discuss?
You know, there was a football topic. Let me see if I could find it real quick. I did have it. I got sidetracked with all this. The NBA talks and the great talk that we've been getting into. So let me see if I can find it right now.
As you look for it, I try to dialect something up or dial something up with Chandler. Chandler, I know there were several topics that you wanted to discuss. One being the Mets organization. Your thoughts on what's going on there and how this is slowly sliding away from them, including the people upstairs in that front office.
Major League Baseball really has some explaining to do to New York Mets fans how they have not forced the Wilpons to sell that team. The Wilpons should be ashamed of themselves for what they're doing. There was a report out today on Twitter that the Mets are trying to find a middle-of-the-order bat. They don't want to give up prospects, and they don't want to take on money. So basically, they want someone to give them a player for free. You are in one of the largest markets in the world when it comes to being a professional sports franchise in New York City. You are running 4A players out there on a daily basis. You don't want to make any trades. You don't want to spend any money, but yet you want the fans to keep spending ridiculous sums of money to come to that stadium. It's a travesty at this point. It is a travesty. The best player they have is Lucas Duda. Lucas Duda, his ceiling is he's a good player. That's the best player in your starting lineup. Your medical staff, for the past years, somebody gets hurt, they say, oh, it's no big deal. 3 weeks later, that person's out for the season. Michael Kadire got hurt about 3 weeks ago. Medical staff said, oh, it's no big deal. He's about to go on a disabled list. His season may be over. What are you doing, Major League Baseball, by allowing this family to still run this franchise? The Mets have a shot to win the National League East. They actually could win the National League East just because of their pitching. If they had a little bit of hitting and they refused to spend any money, you got Sandy Alderson refusing to talk to the media, said, I've got to go walk my dog. I just, you know what? I need Major League Baseball to explain to the fans, and I'm not even a Met fan, and I'm pissed off about this, okay? They need to justify to the fans that are spending their hard-earned money why they're allowing the Wilpons to do this to their franchise.
Now, interesting to me that they still are in the run and knowing how they're actually kind of burning their talent out, if that's a fair thing to say. They did get jumped on last night. Interesting enough, going up against a division foe in the Washington Nationals. But you're right. I mean, looking at the team that they have itself right now, look at their DL list. I mean, really, they have over 8 or 9 players that are out right now that can't actually provide a spark. And Chandler said Duda. I mean, and that's within the specialty players outside of the pitching staff. There's people in that pitching staff that I give a leg up to. But I don't know, man, to look at the Mets, to be specific, the Wilpon family has actually been in high regard to basically the fall of this organization since the Subway Series, to be honest. And a lot of people want to see this Mets team do well. I mean, they're in the thick of things. They can actually still get to the division, you know, to the top of the division. Who knows, especially if they can get some of these players back and get healthy as we get to the dog days of August. But I'm actually sitting at the edge of my seat to see if the Mets can make it happen, because they had an interesting start. They're at second place in the NL East also, so it's not like they're totally in the, you know, the middle of the forest, if you will. But I think this is slowly falling apart. It is slowly falling apart. So hopefully they can get healthy, get back out there and make a run at this. And don't let the Nationals walk away with this division. But the way that the Nationals have been playing, the way the Nationals have been playing, I mean, it's nothing so short to them looking like they're going to win the NL East once again. Do you have any competitive fire around them getting this division in front of this Washington Nationals team, though, Chandler?
Not if they don't make any trades. They lost 7-2 last night. You know who drove in the two runs? The pitcher, Matt Harvey. When your offense has to come from your pitcher, you are a terrible team. And that shows you just how bad the National League is, that the Mets were only two games back with that lineup. And you said they don't have 8 or 9 guys who can come back and help them. There's only one hitter on the disabled list. Everybody else is pitchers. Everybody else is a pitcher, and that's David Wright. David Wright has a back issue. He's never going to be the same. The Mets' offense, the last three games, the majority of their offense has come from their pitchers. You can't make this stuff up. And they still were only two games out. Now they're three games out. You have an opportunity to win the East, and you don't want to spend any money. Here's the thing. The Mets need a second baseman. They need a shortstop. The Cincinnati Reds will give you Brandon Phillips right now. All you have to do is take his contract. They won't do it. They could get Justin Upton from the San Diego Padres. All they have to do is eat the most of the contract. They don't have to give up prospects. They won't do it. There are players out there that are available. They refuse to make the trade. They could have had Didi Gregorius, the guy playing shortstop for the Yankees. They didn't want to pay him. He's making $500,000, and they didn't want to trade for him because he was making too much money. It is a travesty and a disgrace.
Okay, interesting enough that we were talking about this in the green room before we addressed the cookout today. Chandler, how about this? The Tigers and what's going on with their organization, knowing that they said that they are looking to potentially get rid of or move if there's an interest there, watching their best pitcher, to me, David Price, go, and also Cespedes. Do you think Cespedes could be a guy that could go to New York and make that happen? And also have a guy like Price be out there on the market from the Tigers team, knowing that they are hovering at 500 right now. They do have interesting pieces out there. Do you think they can help a New York Mets team, and also speak on what the heck is going on with this Tigers organization right now?
Both of those players could help the Mets. The Mets will not trade for either one of them because of the money. That's just it. As far as the Tigers go, again, if you look at the Detroit Tigers team, they're a 500 ball club. With or without Miguel Cabrera, they're a 500 ball club. Justin Verlander is becoming mortal and starting to be injured, and starting to become a guy who's hurt a lot because the innings and it's the wear and tear of him playing, you know, for 10 seasons, okay, as a fireballer. He's not going to be the same pitcher anymore. David Price is going to be a free agent. They are not going to re-sign David Price because David Price is going to be looking for somewhere in the neighborhood of $200 million. They're not going to give him that. So Detroit is looking at the team they have. They don't really have anything in the farm system. The guy, a pitcher they traded for that they thought was going to be good, Shane Green, has grossly underperformed. I think that he's trying to live up to the fact that he got traded for. The kid is just all out of whack right now. They already got rid of Rick Porcello when they should have held on to him and allowed that young man to grow, but they didn't. The Detroit Tigers right now are, in reality, they're in a rebuild, reload phase, whatever you want to call it. So it makes sense to me that they're going to move Price, and it makes sense to move Cespedes because neither one of them figures into your long-term plans. Yoenis Cespedes is a good player, a very good player. He's not a good fit in that ballpark for whatever reason. He's not a good fit on that team. I don't know why. He's just not a good fit there. I think Cespedes needs to be in a small market. That's why, if you remember, he signed initially with Oakland. When other teams offered him more money, he signed with Oakland. Oakland did not offer him the most money, but he signed there. He needs to be in a Kansas City, an Oakland, a Minnesota. That's where he needs to be. He didn't do well in Boston. He's not doing well in Detroit. Okay, so you know, let's move him to one of those teams. I think the Twins couldn't really use him. They need more pitching than they do a stick. But you know, I mean, the Twins could use him in their lineup. But David Price, I mean, who couldn't use David Price? So I think both of those players will get them back legitimate pieces so that they can retool for next year. But I think Dave Dombrowski's looked at that team and said, we're not winning this year because of the way the Twins are performing, because of the way the Royals are performing, and said, you know what? I may as well just push my chips in the middle of the table, get rid of some of these guys, and get ready for next year. And that's really where I think the Tigers. I think the Tigers are looking at next season already.
Now, interesting name that you threw out there, Justin Verlander. Now, just like you said, he's looking mortal now. Do you think he's burned himself out in these first couple of seasons that he's thrown the ball, or do you think his injuries is, you know, well, it kind of fills in together that he burned himself out and the injuries kind of, you know, racking up on him. Do you think he could get back to the dominance that he once had while he was on the bump, or do you think this could be him on the backside of him going downhill?
Justin Verlander can still be an ace, but he's not going to be the Justin Verlander who throws 100 miles an hour. Is he a guy that can still go out there and win anywhere from 17 to 20 games? Absolutely. But he has to become a pitcher now, not a thrower. And that's an adjustment that he's having to make. I think he still has probably two years left as an ace. Being an ace doesn't mean you throw 100 miles an hour. It just means that you're the best pitcher on the staff. He can still be the best pitcher on the staff for about two more years. And then you look at him as sort of a number two, number three guy. But to think that he's ever going to be the guy who could no-hit you on any given night, no. That Justin Verlander's done. That guy is done. Now you have to accept the fact that you have, and I hate to say diminished, because he's still an all-star pitcher. He's just not a dominant all-star pitcher like he used to be.
Okay, fair enough. And knowing if they do move Price, I mean, he will literally be the focal point of that pitching staff. And I don't know if he can shoulder this load by himself. And then hopefully he can get back to that, you know, laying people down, mowing them down as best as he possibly could, throwing that that heavy heat. But I think this is the latter part of his career. He's what? He's going to be 32 this season. I think he's 32 now, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know if Justin still has that left in his tank to be, you know, the MVP he once was two or three seasons ago and dominating baseball. And I think that's what the Tigers are looking at, you know, to try to get back to relevant status. He's getting beat up there being on the bump. I mean, the last time he was on the bump, it was against the Pirates, no less, I think. And he gave up a good amount of runs while he was out there, being at home, too. So, I don't think he's comfortable. He hasn't really looked like himself out there also. So this is something that, you know, I think the Tigers fans are starved for, to see their star get back out there and throw the ball like he once did while he was out there. But he's not gotten the decision that he's liked since he's gotten back off of the DL.
The best thing they could do for Verlander is shut him down for the rest of the season. Is the best thing they can do for him. Shut him down. Shut him down. Let him go to Florida, get healthy, and work on adjusting to life as a guy who doesn't throw 100 miles an hour anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and I'm going to give you the perfect example, even though he's left-handed. CeCe Sabathia. CeCe Sabathia can't throw 95 anymore. He can still throw 91, 92. Do you know how many pitchers win 15, 20 games with 91, 92? A whole lot. Bartolo Colon is still pitching in baseball. He only throws 91 miles an hour. Anibal Sanchez doesn't throw 95 miles an hour. How close has he come to a no-hitter how many times? This is a guy who's a number two starter, right? Guy who's been in, who could have been an all-star. If you look around the league, 91-92 gets people out, and you can win games with it. But when you've been a guy who's thrown 98-99, it's a mental adjustment to believing you can beat guys with what everybody's calling diminished stuff. The best thing they can do for Verlander is shut him down and let him get a head start on understanding that he needs to change his approach. He has a great breaking ball. His curveball is ridiculous, okay? You give me his curveball with 91, 92 and location, he can win 20 games like that. But he's still trying to be the Justin Verlander you talked about. That guy's gone. He ain't coming back. Except who he is now. Go ahead.
No, I think that was the best way he used to set batters up, was being that overpowering guy that threw heavy heat and being able to slow things down, throw the breaker or the curve, and work batters while he was up there. If he has the dynamics to, you know, be able to place that ball up and paint corners, that'll make them dangerous. But can he learn these new tricks? That is the question right now.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That's why I said they should shut him down and let him get a head start on that. You're not going to win the division. You're not getting the wild card. So what good does it do you to keep running him out there? What good does it do you? Isn't it better to let him start working on changing his thought process and changing how he pitches? Isn't it better to do that now than to keep having him going out there? Because if you keep sending him out there this season while you're still on a periphery of the playoffs, then you don't have time for him to learn how to become a different pitcher, right? So what happens? About three innings in, he's giving up a few runs, his pitch count's high, you're taking him out of the game. What are you doing? You're damaging his confidence more. The best thing they could do for him, man, is shut him down. Plus, he's still not healthy. I don't care what he says. The dude's not healthy.
Okay, Nacho, did you find a topic that you like to throw on the grill?
Yeah, it was actually pertaining to the wide receivers and not necessarily the free agents that have gotten signed, like a Macklin or Torrey or Andre, but the three names that came out to my that popped out to me were, I believe, two Super Bowl winners and one who's, I believe, been to a Super Bowl, and Wes Welker, Reggie Wayne, and James Jones. Those guys are still unsigned. Does this go to the fact that, and I believe that this is true, that this NFL does not care about experience as much anymore when it comes to wide receivers? More or less, they want the youth and what comes with that, which is the higher end abilities in athletics, being able to jump higher, run faster, and things of that nature, just because they're not as old as these gentlemen are. And I think that, and I can't name them, but I'm pretty sure there's at least 8 to 10 teams out there that could use a Reggie Wayne, a Wes Welker, and a James Jones on their team. So my premise would be, why haven't they been signed? And is it that they're just too old and they're just going to have to wait until there is a bevy of injuries at the wide receiver position for a team and just hope that their name is drawn out of a hat? Is that the situation that those three are in right now? And as it pertains to other ones, there is, a few other names at wide receivers still left out there. But is this the youth movement that's going on? Which I think that's going on. It's just the youth movement. We just want the bigger, faster, stronger kids, and we'll train them as they go. Why doesn't get the experienced wide receivers that can come in and possibly win you a game or two with their experience?
That is a very interesting topic. I like this. Now, two of them, I can address. One of them, I don't know what's going on with. Now, I think you should be able to answer, and Reggie Wayne. They're saying that the Packers are actually interested in Reggie Wayne. Talk about being fully loaded in the receiver position, having Cobb, potentially Wayne, Jordy Nelson, and the young boy Adams as well as Boykin. That'll actually be a very heavy receiving core, but I don't even want to give Green Bay any ideas. I don't. But they're saying that they're intrigued in it. They said there's a potential 7 to 8 teams that are interested in Reggie Wayne. Now, this actually hurts me to discuss him like this because I like the way that he did his thing as he left the Miami Dolphins. And when I was saying that, that was Wes Welker. Wes Welker was really a specialist while he was with the Dolphins. He came to the Patriots, and everybody knew about him being one of Brady's go-to guys, the 100-grab man, one of the first guys to ever do it consistently 4 straight years. And then he goes to Denver, leaving one great quarterback, going to another great quarterback. And, you know, he's back into that injury-prone question if he can stay out there on the field. And you see a heavy drop in his numbers on receptions and so forth. And now nobody wants Wes Welker. And I'm thinking, is it because he's injury-prone? If he's older, I mean, he still has quickness. I don't think he has speed any longer. I mean, he still is that dangerous receiver from, let's be honest, 3 yards to 7 yards. He could still get that in-and-out route down, and it could still be a possession receiver. But I don't know if the NFL or teams around the league want to deal with a guy like Wes Welker that could potentially be in the train tracks of a linebacker that could be waiting to mow him down. Because let's be honest, look how many concussions this guy has faced. I don't think a team would want to hang on to a guy like Wes Welker soaking up money and a position on the roster when he's giving these guys anywhere from 11 to 12 games a season, let's be honest. But the one that I don't know about is Jones. And, you know, why no team has actually picked him up? I mean, he's fairly in the middle of his career. He has decent speed, big game capability. He can score the ball. I don't know. This is the question that I have around Jones is, you know, once he left the Raiders organization, it's like, you know, it's more or less like a no-fly zone. Nobody wants to bother him. So I don't know why these teams are leaving James Jones alone. That is an interesting question that you threw out there. Chandler, at least the three receivers that he's mentioned, if you want to throw another receiver out there that nobody's actually touched or made big wavelengths throughout the league, have at it.
Well, it's finances. Well, for Wes Welker, first of all, nobody's going to touch him because he shouldn't be playing anymore. He's had too many concussions. I'm sorry. He needs to retire for his own health. But the biggest thing is the finances, because these guys have played a certain amount of years. When you sign them, the minimum you can offer them is much larger than the minimum you would give some unsigned kid that's just out of college. And with the new CBA, it basically priced those receivers out of the game. Teams can't afford to have that fourth receiver be that veteran guy who's teaching the youngsters and he's not playing as much and you're saving him, you know, a couple of big games a year. He comes up big for you and in the big moments. But other than that, he's really there to be a mentor. They can't afford to have that guy on the roster anymore. If that guy's not going to be one of their top three, they're not going to sign him. And that's why Reggie Wayne is unsigned and can't, and nobody, you know, isn't signed. And James Jones, come on. Like you said, he could be the top three for somebody, but it comes down to finances. This is what their union negotiated. And it priced guys like this, receivers, veteran receivers, you know, that like this, defensive players off it. It's priced that player, that veteran mentor player, who is helping your team in many other ways other than just catches or sacks or whatever it is. They price that player out of the game. That's why nobody's signing these guys. And we're going to see more and more of this over the next few years. We're going to see guys, you know, remember when guys like Kevin Mahway and guys like that, they would move around and they would go to team, and you were like, well, he's not going to start too many games, but they were there for a reason. The Tony Richardson of the world, guys like that. That's who these guys would be now, but the teams can't afford to have them. The only teams that they can go to that can afford them are the teams that were terrible, because those are usually teams with the most cap space. But if you're at this stage in your career, do you want to go to a terrible team, or do you want to go to a team with a chance to win? A team with a chance to win, closer to the salary cap, they can't afford you.
Okay, Nacho, your thoughts on at least the three receivers that you were discussing. How do you think this is going to pan out with at least these three?
You know, and then Chandler hit it kind of directly on the head where I was getting to. It's just too much money for these teams to take on. And like he said, it's going to be a not so good to terrible team with lots of funds in the bank that's got a bunch of young talent that needs a mentor that's going to be able to take them on. So, you know, pick a bevy of the bottom of the 10 teams in the NFL that you know, have a bunch of young receivers that don't have a good receiving core. That's where I think these three guys might end up. There's no names that I can pull out of a hat right now at the top of my head. But if you look at the bottom of the list in receiving corps in the NFL, I have a feeling that's where they'll end up going if they love this game, if they still want to play, if they can play. I am in agreement with Chandler and Utah on Wes Welker. I think the injuries, the concussion, that is a thing that has taken a toll on this man. He's played a lot of great NFL years. I know the ring has eluded him. But you know, the bevy of plays, the bevy of big plays at such a small stature and quote unquote a big man's game, he has taken over multiple games for multiple teams, and I think his career has subsequently, due to concussion, has come to an end. But Reggie Wayne and James Jones, I don't understand it, and I do equate that to being a money thing. People just don't want to pay them as much. James Jones being 8 years, a veteran. I can't right now give you the number off the top of my head for Reggie Wayne, but that's the problem when it comes to the new CBA and why I am a little upset that the and this brings up another topic, not necessarily more towards the wide receivers, but the fact that the NFL and the NFL owners used us as fans and the fear of us, quote-unquote, rioting if there was no football to kind of pressure the NFL players into giving into the CBA that we're currently into, which is now robbing me as an NFL fan of, you know, two of possibly three. You know, if West didn't have the concussion problems, we're talking about three of good tier one, tier two mental quality wide receivers with the abilities of a number two or a number three receiver still left in their body that are not on a team because the good teams can't afford them right now or at all. So they're going to probably settle for a lot less money than they're going to have to, and it's just too much. So I'm definitely not excited, you know, about the fact that these three players are not playing on a team right now as an NFL a fan of the game, because these guys need to be on the field. I enjoyed the play that they put on the field, albeit Wes Welker being the injury-prone one, and I would like to see him hanging up. But the other two, multiple ones, even like a Robert Meacham, a Santana Moss, whatever you say about them, they're at the end of their careers, but they are veterans that they could help a team out. They're just too expensive, like Chandler said. So I'm just, you know, a little dissatisfied with the money situation, but it's interesting to me that these guys, like I said, two of them have Super Bowl rings, one has Super Bowl experience, they're all good receivers, and mentally to be able to teach the bevy of young receivers that we've seen get drafted in this last draft, imagine any one of these receivers helping any one of the young guys out there just to see them grow. They're not going to get that tutelage on the field. And it takes away from them, and it takes away from me as an NFL fan watching these kids struggle.
The interesting thing to me is watching a guy like Reggie Wayne or Wes Welker end up retiring without being connected to a team, letting it go. Now, more than likely, I think Reggie Wayne will probably be able to go back to Indianapolis and hang that jersey up, but the situation with Wes, I mean, where does he end up going? I mean, Denver, does he go back to the Patriots and be able to wrap it up? Or I doubt if he go back to Miami, because he loved every moment of him leaving Miami. So that's one thing in itself. I think James Jones will be the first one signed out of that batch. Out of those three receivers, I think Jones is the one that a team will take a shot on before any of those three guys. That's just me. All right, well, we are at the tail end of the show. Thank you for getting ready to shut this one down. We had interesting topic after interesting topic going all across the board. here at the Cookout. I need plugs and closeouts from the both of you as we shut down the grill here tonight. Nacho, I'll start with you first. Thank you for stopping by the Cookout. Give me a plug and closeout as we shut down the grill.
You know, 8 weeks or so left till the NFL season kicks off. Hashtag back-to-back MVPs like always. This is going to be an exciting season for everyone involved, from the number one pick in the 2016 NFL draft to the number 32 pick in the 2016 NFL draft. This is going to be an amazing year for everyone. I anticipate amazing things on the field as it pertains to plays on the defense, the offense, just literally all around. I think we're going to see players do amazing things, a la the Odell Beckham catch, just that we're left with our jaws dropped week in and week out from an amazing play by a different person. And it's just so exciting as a fan of the game to see that, especially as a fan of a team that's going to win 12 to 13 games. It's an even better feeling. So again, Food Fight on Saturdays, Ed Nacho in the Box, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Andre Ward calling out Triple G. Triple G is most likely going to accept. We're going to see this fight. Hopefully this is the December fight. Ty, I already know what you're doing in December. Most likely the event will take place in Vegas. Hopefully this can get wrapped up, settled up. There's no more talking. There's no more disputing. This can be the fight of the fight for December. We'll have we all know who in September. Canelo, Cotto, November, and in December, wrap it up with Triple G and Andre Ward. This could be an amazing last few months of the year when it pertains to boxing and what we could be witnessing on the grand boxing stage for the last two fights anyway. So when it comes to the food fight on Saturday, be definitely checking out for some good debates going on. I know Ty and I are really big Triple G fans. But a lot of people and a lot of strong boxing fans feel that Andre Ward is a cakewalk for him to walk all over Triple G. So this is going to be exciting. I know we'll get some callers. I know we'll get some people in there interested to debate. Definitely me on Triple G, who I think will have another knockout on his belt after facing Andre Ward. So this is going to be exciting, and I'm just really excited for boxing, which is not dead. And it's going to be an amazing, amazing PBC rest of the year as well. So thanks, Ty, for letting me come on, Chandler. Let me come on, say my piece, say what I want to. And you know, let's go, Pat, go.
Don't forget now, I'm an SOG fan, too. I mean, I like Triple G, too, but I'm a Son of a Gun fan, too. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. And about time you hear it. I've been telling you that he's been calling Triple G out. Now about time. You've been smelling what I've been cooking about this situation, so it's on. Hopefully they can get this thing signed. That is for sure. I don't know who wins this fight. If you got a tactical boxer up against a slugfest type of boxer, this is going to be great. Chandler, I need a plug and close out as we shut it down here at the Cookout.
That was a lot of fun tonight, man. Thanks, Nacho. Thanks for coming, man. It's good. We got to talk a variety of sports. The only thing I'm going to say is this. The first professional sports franchise in North America that's going to be in Las Vegas will come from the NHL. Another money grab, but they're going to make a lot of money with a team in Vegas. A lot of money. A lot of money. Okay.
It's my Coyotes.
Yeah. The city of Glendale did what they did. That was a money grab. That team should have never been in Arizona. They had terrible ownership, even though there are hockey in Arizona. And when that team did well, the fans came out. But they had terrible owners. This is not the fault of the fans. This is the fault of the NHL, why the Coyotes are no longer going to be there in Arizona. But don't listen. Go ahead and prepare for it, people. Start making your vacation plans. You're going to go watch some hockey while you're in Vegas. You're going to be able to do it next year.
For cheap.
Chandler, you my boy, Blue. You my boy, Blue. I know this. I'm making my plans. That's for sure. But my plans are already made. My plans are already made. So hopefully that boy is on to something. SportsCityChefs.com. Check out the website, the interviews, the blog. The chefs will be back here Thursday doing what we do best at the cafe. The master chefs will all be here from Arkeezy, Slim Jim, that man, Nasha Diamonds, and your boy, TP Thomas. We will hold you down as much as we possibly can. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chef again. And if they don't know, now they know.
What a thought, I'd be caught in this life, let's celebrate with a toast and get lost in tonight and make it all light up. Wait until the sun goes down, we gon' make this bitch light up. Even when the sun goes down, I'ma make it go.
Ow, hoes turning heads like owls. I'm the man of the owl. Triple entendre, don't even ask me how. Con Edison flaunt connected to a high power. Y'all can miss me with the money talk. The smart money's on hold, fuck what the dummies talk. I don't do too much blogging. I just run the town, I don't do too much jogging. The summer's off, the winter too. Top down in the winter, that's what winners do. And to these niggas, I'm like Windows 7. You let them tell it, they swear that they invented you. And since no good deed go unpunished, I'm not as cool with niggas as I once was. I once was cool as the funds was. But these bright lights turned me to a monster. Sorry, mama, I promise you wouldn't kill me, but I wouldn't win insane had I remained the same me. Fuck me, this is true. All I got is this money.
Who would've thought I'd be caught in this life? Let's celebrate with a toast and get lost in tonight and make it all light.